Welcome to season 4 of the Fit Farming Food Mom Podcast. Connie is a world champion powerlifter, former bodybuilder, and an elite trainer and nutrition coach. As a movement enthusiast and health nerd, she is here on this show to speak with educated guests and dive into the realm of all things health, fitness, mindset, and everything in between. If you enjoy this show, please do us a huge favor by smashing the like or subscribe button and leaving a review. Now, let's get to the show.
Hey friends, welcome back to another episode. Today I'm super excited because I have Sophia Vieiras coming on the podcast. She is my new friend that I met a couple weeks ago while speaking at a conference about optimizing lab work in athletes. So it was really cool because as she was giving her talk, I was shaking my head. As I was giving my talk, she was shaking her head. And then she was like, I have a talk later on to give that follows up with this. And we hit it right off. It was really, really fun. So now I have another connection, another friend out there, another person doing what I do, which is help people get optimized. So super fun meeting her. And I was really excited right off the bat. I was like, you've got to come on my podcast and we can chat all about this stuff. So really pumped that you guys get to listen to her today. She is a doctor of physical therapy. She's a 2-time USAPL national powerlifting champ. She's also an equipped lifter such as myself, which is really exciting. And we talk about that a little bit on the show. She's also an international coach and a category 2 referee for powerlifting. And I can't wait for you to hear from her as we talk about pretty much everything on this podcast. But we dive a lot into stress and female hormones and all of the things that really matter. No, you don't have to be a powerlifter to listen to this. There is a lot of good information and a lot of good pearls. Before we get going on the podcast, I just want to remind you, if you are a powerlifter and you are listening to this podcast, jump on over to Anderson Powerlifting. They have a ton of awesome stuff, and you can get a discount using my code ConnieN10 for 10% off of any orders that you want to make. So just wanted to remind you of that. Also wanted to remind you of Element, my favorite electrolyte drink. It is the best, guys, and I know I talk about this on every podcast, but I am pretty much obsessed with it. Most people are not getting enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium. This is a wonderful electrolyte blend with no added sugar. So everything you need, nothing that you don't. I highly recommend it. Great for the kids' soccer games. We have fall soccer getting going here, so I'm going to be that mom that brings the bottles of water and the Element electrolytes. So pop on over to the website, lmnt.com/Connie. Get yourself a free sample pack with your first order and try it out. They have 100% money back guarantee. So if you don't like it, you can keep it, give it to your friends, whatever you want. They give you your money back. So great deal. Anyway, without me rambling on any further, here is my episode with Sophia. All right, Sophia, I'm so excited to have you on the show. Long time no see.
I know it's been a whole week, but I'm excited to be here and thanks for having me on here with you today.
So this was pretty great. We met at a conference we were both talking at two weeks ago now. I've lost track of time. I don't even know. Yeah, I think we're both in the same place with that. But anyway, we met at this conference. I got up there, spoke about lab work, and the whole time you're like shaking your head. Yes, you know. And then the minute I sat down next to you, you're like, I'm going to follow this up with the best topic. And you started telling me, and I was like, this is amazing, right? Because so many people don't realize that we have all these outside factors that revolve around our success with our training, whether it be for general population people just getting fit or for the elite competition athlete. We got a lot of things going on. So I was so pumped when you started talking about all this stuff because it doesn't get talked about enough.
Definitely. I think it was awesome how well both of our presentations played off each other. Like me starting with the stress bucket, and I could see your face being like, oh, she's talking about the bucket analogy and stress. And then you dove into stress, talking about how stress influences hormones. And then I'm like, oh, I'm coming right back and talking about hormones. This is perfect. So I really loved how our presentations worked well off each other. And we were clearly on the same page with how we thought about a lot of the things too. So that was awesome to connect there.
And that was a lot of fun as well, because man, there's so much like bad information out there, right? where people are like, people, it's like more, train harder. And like you talked about that in one of the talks, that one of the presentations that you gave was, you know, people are train harder and it turns into these nagging injuries, right? And you know, eat all of these terrible supplements and do all of these things that are really unnecessary and they're just really inhibiting your progress. But people see it on social media, so they're like, yeah, let's do this. So now I think a lot more of the functional side is being brought into things, which is really exciting in the training realm, because you can really optimize and keep yourself healthy at the same time.
Definitely. And I think one of the things we also connected about was how, with all of this information out there, the funniest part is that it comes back to the basics. It's like people are worrying about bulldozing through training when they're not even sleeping well or drinking water or eating well. It's like, have you just tried, you know, supporting success by doing these outside factors? But yes, the equation for performance is multifactorial. A lot goes into it, but it's also a lot simpler than we maybe give it credit for sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we all kind of went to lunch together and started talking about that, right? I mean, everybody wants to dive into working with a coach like you or I, but a lot of times they haven't mastered those little things, the everyday things like the drinking the water, the sleep, you know, try to get enough protein in, all of that kind of stuff. And so without mastering those basics, sometimes jumping into the harder stuff is not attainable for some people.
Definitely. And sometimes it just takes continuing to work at the basics. It's funny because I'm 10 years into powerlifting now, and I've recognized that my best performances come together when I'm focused in on all the little things. So, you know, I think you can really max out that stuff for a while before wanting to focus in on these little nuances.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, before we get off on any more tangents, because I think we could probably get real, real crazy with this. First of all, who are you and what do you do and what are you about and what records and all these things? You got a lot of stuff going on.
Definitely. So a little bit about myself. I'm Sophia Varis. Excited to be here with everybody. I was actually the only female on the men's wrestling team in high school. And that's how I ended up getting into the sports medicine route. So I knew I wanted to study something to do with sports medicine, ended up pursuing physical therapy and rehab at Northeastern University. I still wrestled actually while I was at Northeastern. But after 2 years, I accomplished my goal, won nationals. And then I moved on, focused in on PT school. After about 2 years of not playing a sport, I realized how much I missed playing a sport. And I discovered the Northeastern powerlifting team. Here I am 10 years later. Now I still competitively powerlift. I'm a national referee, a national coach. I work now as a full-time coach for myself and physical therapist. So I kind of work to bridge that gap between rehab to return to performance and help others do the same.
Mm-hmm. This is amazing that you're doing all of these things together simultaneously, because so many of these things get broken into one division or another, and you're kind of bringing it all into one place, which is pretty cool.
Definitely. I totally forgot that I teach others about all these things. So that's how you met me doing the seminar. But I do teach with Barbell Rehab, and I help other physical therapists, personal trainers figure it out. But I do love that educational component, and glad I get to meet cool people like you doing that too.
Likewise. I mean, I've met so many cool people at conferences, and I mean, it's really cool. I get to go to Swiss this year, which I'm super excited about. I'm going to meet all sorts of people and drag them on the podcast, I'm sure. But it's funny how you meet somebody and you have an instant connection. So that's pretty awesome. So let's talk about your powerlifting career then.
Yes. Yes. So powerlifting, super fun. I was blessed to be on the Northeastern powerlifting team, and we had actually one of the best coaches of the world was our team coach, and he turned us all into world champions. So that was my introduction into the sport. Ended up a world champion in college, and then now multi-time. Well, I've won nationals multiple times. I've won the Arnold's. I just won nationals this past year. Just went to bench nationals. Yes, I really enjoy competing still at a high level. But now I hope to help others do the same. So I'm also super passionate about helping others achieve that success. I had no idea I would end up down this route where powerlifting would become my whole life, but I'm really glad I got introduced to the sport and really thankful for where it's brought me.
Well, and we're both in the same weight class too. And by the way, that's just such a small resume you got going on there, right? I was trying to get you to spit it all out because there's too much there. I don't even know that you can say it all in one breath of sentence. But yeah, anyway, so that's pretty cool. We're both the same size, which was funny because then afterwards I was like, what size briefs do you got? Like, what's going on here? You know, it was funny. But yeah, so let's talk about females and performance, because a lot of people are really undereducated in that. I realized the other day how much females don't even understand their own menstrual cycle. I was talking to someone the other day and I wanted her to do her lab work. And I was like, okay, well, you got to do that on the 21st day-ish of your cycle. And she's like, well, so is day one when I get done with my period? And I was like, ooh, no. I was like, it's when you very first start to bleed. And it would be one thing if that was just a single case, but I hear this really, really frequently. So I think we should dive into a little bit of how the menstrual cycle works and how it can influence our athletic goals too.
Definitely. And it's interesting because I think this is something even that I found new curiosity in. And I think it actually stems from more of our time when we're 15, 16. I don't know about you, but I was very quickly put on birth control. And so I never really had to regulate a real cycle till more recently, which has been great. But I wish that I had maybe been educated about that at a younger age in a different way. Like, I don't think kids take things like sex ed seriously. We're like, haha, you know, periods. Mm-hmm. But now I'm like, wow, you know, like there's so much to really understand about how your body works. And we tend to just mask it in society for a while. We're like, oh no, no babies yet. Like, just take a pill for it. But there are other things that you could do for it, like regulating your cycle and understanding when things happen at particular times. And even just understanding the influence of having it and not having it, right? So if you work with more pubescent females, if they haven't had their period, well, what's the implication when they do get it? And then if you work with more masters athletes, I'll say I have a lot of women going through menopause, and you know, that influences their just cycle and development as well. So it's important that we consider this across the lifespan.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's funny because when you say the word testosterone, people think steroids, right? But what they don't know is estrogen is actually extremely influential in your ability to build muscle as well. So women don't worry when they lose their cycle, when in fact they might actually not be optimized for their training and recovery needs because they're lacking that hormone.
Definitely. And there's a lot of complexities when we talk about hormones, but I think just in general, people forget that we still have testosterone and men still have things like estrogen too. But yes, at various levels. And it's interesting because that was more your presentation, was looking at the numbers and the levels. Mm-hmm. But even when you look at the ranges of some of these numbers, like it goes from 50 to 250, what kind of range is that? Mm-hmm. You know, so it's just understanding what's maybe normal for you. Mm-hmm. And that could be different compared to what ranges are, because these ranges are so variable. But just understanding the ebbs and flows of them going up and down, as well as in relation to each other too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, the thing about it is like you said, you went on birth control at a young age. And like you said, where it's like, oh yeah, I can't have babies right now. Cool. You don't think of the other impacts, such as like estrogen and progesterone, that if they're low, you could end up with anxiety or depression. And there's a huge correlation between depression and being on birth control. And then you end up on an SSRI, because estrogen and progesterone are also highly influential in the production of serotonin. Well, we need that to be happy. So if we're shutting that down via essentially a hormone that we're taking, then that can also cause other issues as well.
Definitely. I think people forget about the systemic effect of all of these hormones. And yes, there are receptors for these hormones all over, including things like our brain and our cardiac tissues, right? And so these hormones have a much greater implications than just our reproductive health, but they also influence our musculoskeletal health, our neurological health, and all of the rest of our body. And so we have to consider the implications of what removing some of these hormones does to our body and how our bodies adapt in maybe not the more maladaptive strategies or the opposite, right? There are some benefits to being on birth control here still too. Same thing for hormone replacement therapy. There's a time and a place. But before we just go and stick people on it, I think it's good to have an understanding of what's going on underneath.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I touched on that on my talk a lot too. And I actually had quite a few people come and talk to me afterwards about that, because it's easy to look at somebody and be like, okay, you have low estrogen, or you have low testosterone, or you have low progesterone. And it's easy to just say, okay, yeah, here's this hormone, and now you're going to feel better. But what's shutting it down upstream? That's the big question. And that's what I see going on a lot in not just life, but the fitness industry as well.
Definitely. I think in general, we've become very quick to maybe use medications as the solution when that may not be the solution if you're not questioning why is this problem happening in the first place. Mm-hmm. I think that was one of the things I loved most about your presentation. You looked at stress and how stress can influence all of these numbers. Well, if you're not managing your stress, then you can't really expect these numbers to trend in the way you want them to. And so even things like that, stress management, are huge for getting something like your neuroendocrine system under control.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the bucket, because that's one of my favorite analogies. And I never talk about it on the podcast. It's a frequent analogy I use with all my clients. But let's talk about the bucket for a minute, because I think the bucket can be used in so many scenarios. And we're going to dive into that. But people have a tendency to hone in on single things. And I'm going to use nutrition as an example. They get meticulous about their nutrition. And they're like, I'm still not seeing any results. But then they have all these other things filling up their bucket. So let's dive into that a little bit.
Definitely. So we consider this the stress bucket, for people who are wondering, why are they talking about a bucket? So the bucket describes your capacity for stress, particularly when you think about even cumulative stress. Like, okay, we have the stress that our diet can have on us. We have the stress that our sleep can have on us. We have our work stress. We have financial stress, social stress. Lots of things contribute into this stress bucket. But there's also things that we can do to build a more robust bucket, or have a bucket that's capable of handling greater loads. And this is what we do with strength training. We train our bodies to be able to handle more. But essentially, a lot of these kind of maladaptive behaviors or injuries come when this bucket starts to overflow. Essentially, you are now exceeding your body's capability to tolerate stress, whether it's physical stress, emotional stress, or that cumulative stress of all of it coming, which is more so what it tends to be, particularly when we're looking at injuries. It's not usually one thing that caused it or another. It's how all of these things came together to cause the situation at hand. But yeah, looking at things from a comprehensive lens is something that I think gets missed in a lot of fields.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, the more you remove from that stress bucket in the form of getting quality sleep, stressing less, I know that's a hard one, right? Because everybody wants to stress less, but then we find ourselves worried about the traffic on the freeway at the 7 a.m. rush hour. And we find ourselves stressing about things that we are totally are out of our control, right? But you've got that. And then environmental stressors are huge now too. We're working with a lot of things. You know, you've got foods that have a lot of crap in them that's not great as far as like from a toxic burden. You've got so many influences coming from the outside that you can't account for. So I always tell people, start accounting for the things that you can account for. Now, this, don't be misconstrue this message. People get obsessive about these things, right? They're like, oh no, I can't go in this room because it might be moldy, or I can't go to my neighbor's house because I have to walk across their lawn. And you do see people take it way too far, right? But the thing about it is, if you're just controlling on a consistent basis, the basics, then you're able to lower the amount of stress in that bucket. So then you're able to optimize everywhere else.
Definitely. And, you know, I think you nailed it with a lot of different things that can contribute to these stressors, but there's also things that we can work to at least reduce them or control the controllable variables. I love that because, and especially when we're talking about strength sports, there are things that are out of our control, right? I can't control my genetics compared to somebody else, but I can control my sleep, my nutrition, my hydration, and things like that. Or factor in for them if I can't control them. So one of the best ways to mitigate the risk for injury is not adding in stress if you already see the stress piling up. So especially as a strength coach where I get to add things like physical stress to your plate, well, if you tell me that you're going through a very difficult time in life, you've got a lot going on, then I'm not going to overload you with a ton of work in the gym. Mm-hmm. Maybe that point in your gym routine is like, all right, let's maintain and sustain. Let's get you through this tough patch in your life, you know, like, and then once the stress reduces in life, we can increase training stress. But if I don't factor that in as a coach, then that's where people are more likely to get injured. It's just the stress keeps piling on and it's too much and they don't have the capacity to get rid of it.
Can you tell me, here's a thought. Can you tell me, are you more as a female at times in your cycle, are there times when you would be more prone to injury than other times in your cycle? Do you know anything about that?
So they've looked at this with a few injuries, and we can't say definitively either way. But what we want to be mindful of is just the systemic effects of the hormones, where certain hormones, like being high in progesterone, for example, that purposely helps with things like ligamentous laxity. Because if you think of the role of it, it's supposed to make you more lax for things like pregnancy and delivery later. But laxity is not a good thing when we're talking about, for example, ACL risk, mm-hmm. Right? If your ligaments are more lax, well, that's not exactly, you know, conducive to protecting your ligaments in these situations. But I do think it's an individual circumstance where everyone does have varying levels of these hormones as well. So it's hard to say from the research one way or the other if that was the main causative effect, where it's probably multifactorial. Maybe there's a component where she's a little bit looser, but maybe she just wasn't strong in the first place because, like, yeah, your muscles contribute to your stability as well. So now couple it with, okay, you're weak and you're not like strong on a hormonal level. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not exactly a recipe. But then let's say nobody hits your knee. Well, then you're fine, right? Like, if no one hits it in the first place, then you're not going to get injured. So I do think we can't definitively say either way if mm-hmm. it's the driving factor of an injury, as it may be a source of stress in the bucket.
Mm-hmm. Now, as a cycling female, are there anything that you would like to bring to light when it comes to training and the menstrual cycle? I know a lot of people think that there are times that you should back down training or you should do, I mean, some of this stuff is crazy, right? I'm like, I honestly feel like, and this is just me, unless I've now just placeboed the heck out of my brain, for sure, I am strong as a mofo a couple days into my cycle. Like, and it's really weird because right before I start, I'm weak. And then all of a sudden I start it and it's like, boom, I'm setting PRs like no one's business. And then you hear other stuff where people are like, oh no, on the menstrual cycle, you need to do yoga and you need to not go to the gym. And there's like so many crazy things out there. Is there anything you'd like to contribute to those thoughts?
Definitely. I personally think it's swung too far. And I would caution anyone listening to this to think of it as a red flag if anyone tries to sell you a period-driven training program. Like, that's probably the biggest scam out there. I'm so sorry if anyone listening sells something like that. But so some people may be sensitive to it. Others may not at all. So why am I going to blanket say that, hey, this is going to be the training program for everybody? And so I would say you won't even know that until you get someone on a program for a few months. And if you notice that someone is particularly sensitive to their period, even then people experience different sways of this too. So there's not a consistent theme. You really got to take the individual in front of you. And so that, like, I would not say that you need to track everyone's cycle and that you need to put them on this stuff. Instead, if you notice that someone's strength is taking a huge dip, let's say you've been working for them for 4 months and you notice, like, wow, there's 1 week they just really don't do well. And maybe they know when it's coming and maybe not. Like, that's something you can start to ask for on check-ins. And all right, maybe I decrease the training stress on that week, or we go a little more volume, a little less load, or when I know you feel like you just said, you feel like an ox, you feel like you can do anything. I'm like, okay, that's the time we can beef up your RPE. But I wouldn't say that everybody needs this. I would say the other times where I'm maybe more considerate about things like hormones is if people are trying to get pregnant, only because at that rate, I want, and they want their body's energy stores to go to baby production, not necessarily training. So that's when I would drop training stress a little bit, when I know that they're in ovulation time or leading into that. So that way they can prioritize that energy demands from their body for baby production. But that's the only time I put a little bit more thought into it.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I've never been one. Yeah, yeah. I've never been one to really align with this. I mean, people say they coach it, but I'm like, are they really coaching this? Because you would literally go crazy. There are so many variables in people. I mean, we jump even back into the stress thing and the ratios I was giving when I was talking about my lab work and where optimized is. Really, there's a huge it depends number there. And it's not even something that you would fully understand until you started doing like you were saying, which is looking at the numbers.
Oh, definitely. And I think even when we look at numbers, there's also expectations versus reality, right? And expectations, we're all in a beautiful 28-day cycle and we ovulate on the exact same day every single month. And this is the exact same day. But if you've, you know, and it's funny now tracking all of this, it's not the same day. Like I have the window they give you, but even then there's been a time where you're early. There's sometimes you're late and the stress can influence this. I have a client who she regularly tracks all this and, you know, she was traveling on an airplane and all of a sudden her body went out of whack and it just threw off. She noticed her vaginal temperatures were different because of the stress from traveling. And, you know, this is someone who's very actively, you know, looking at these kind of things. So, it's not perfect. We can't dictate these perfect cycles. Someone's maybe 26, another person's maybe 33. And then maybe 1 month it's 26 and maybe the next month it's 29. So I can't necessarily plan my whole life around this, but this is where using RPE and training is good, you know? And then maybe taking in like an athlete readiness form where if they just don't feel as good, drop the RPEs down a half point from what I put, or, you know, actually meet the RPEs instead of number chasing, which I know we're all guilty of too.
Just a little bit, especially us nerds, right? It's like, oh yes, let me be my own science project for the day, right? I know. I have had a perfect 26-day cycle for since I had my daughter, nine years, right? But I can tell you one thing. I can always guarantee if I plan a powerlifting meet, I'm going to be on my period every time. But recently it changed by like 3 days and I was like, what the heck is going on? I had to go back and look through everything. Like it just had me wondering, like, why all of a sudden would there be a change in what I'm doing? Right. And it actually, honestly, for me, it came down to me actually changing up one of the supplements I was taking. I take Vitex for progesterone support because I'm pushing all the time and I want to make sure I don't upset my balance. And I actually just switched brands and I didn't pay much attention to it, but I think switching brands affected my cycle potentially a little bit, or maybe it was just a fluke thing, right? But you over time, when you kind of track these things, which I always suggest females track their cycle because it's a great indication of, you know, if they're pushing too hard in training and things too, or stress, or like you said, stress of flying, things like that. It could be a great indication if you're used to something being the same and something changes significantly, like, okay, what's going on, you know?
Definitely. And I think those are the bigger red flags that we look for. If there's like a significant change, and it's, you know, maybe a little bit of that change is even stress induced as well. So I'll tell you, I accidentally lose weight before meets every single time. It's like, I'm always like, sorry, coach, lost 3 pounds. Like, I'm just that lifter, but it's the stress. It's always like the stress of traveling the meet. I swear my weight will be up the whole training cycle. I'm like, I'm so pumped. I've got it held high. And then the week of a meet, 2 to 3 pounds drops without trying. And it's sometimes just the stress response. But we forgot our bodies, again, that cumulative stress bucket analogy. The other thing that I get more worried about with periods is if people lose them. So it's like, if something changed, if we're now in more of this like female athlete triad cycle, or you know, you're losing it, or it's not consistent, or it's very far off, you're missing it for months. Yeah, that's when I'm a little more concerned. And not even about like training, but I'm like, hey, you should probably go and follow up with somebody on this, because this is not, you know, a regulated cycle throughout this process.
That's a huge one too. And some people are like, used to see it in the bodybuilding forums all the time, because that was kind of my former jam. And they're like, oh, I couldn't wait to lose my period, I hate having a period and blah blah blah. But the problem is you're not optimized at that point either. Like, there's so many other things that are off balance that it's almost harder to lose fat at that point if you're somebody trying to get lean. So a good coach is going to, if you are a bodybuilder, going to keep you having your cycle as long as possible, if not the whole time, to optimize fat loss.
Definitely. I think the toughest thing is that they may not know if we don't tell them this information as athletes, or if we don't ask as coaches. So I'll admit, I lost my period as a wrestler. I was the only girl on the men's wrestling team. There was no way I was going to tell anyone about my cycle, let alone my coach. So I just never said anything about it. So I'll admit, I lost it. All the significant weight cutting that we would do. And it was, these were awful weight cutting practices too. You know, this was like the sauna, the sweat bags, all of it. But I ended up breaking my ankle. And I think that was because my bone mineral density had decreased from all of this too. So I think part of it is having the conversations with our athletes, also encouraging this open communication, so athletes aren't afraid to say these things. And then doing something about it when an athlete does tell you it's happening.
Yeah, that was kind of a weird thing for me at first. Being a female athlete and being predominantly male coached, right? When I switched to male coaches, it was like, oh, I got to tell this guy all my business, you know, and it was kind of weird. And then, oh, and then you want to jump in even funner things is like, be an equipped power lifter, female with a male coach. That's always a fun one too, right? Getting equipment set or stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, there are things that these coaches need to know though. It's very important. And if they're a good coach, they want to know.
Definitely. I'm thankful that my coach asks me these kind of questions, you know, and he does it in a chill way that it doesn't make it weird. Because that's it too. It's like, you got to approach these things. And like, you know, if you're nonchalant about it, I'll be nonchalant about it. But I think probably one of the things that I appreciate most from him is, believe it or not, in my 20 years of doing a like weight class regulated sport, he was the first person to say, hey, you should go up a weight class. And like, I don't even think I realized how badly I needed to hear those words. They had just gotten rid of my weight class, so I had to make this decision to go up or down. And I think I very easily could have convinced myself that going down was the smart choice, but it wasn't. And you know what? I'm so glad I didn't even have to think about it, because he was like, nope, go up. We're going to get you nice and strong and muscular, and like, it's going to be fine. So I was like, all right, sounds good. Like, I could work with this plan. And I feel like I'd kind of gotten some semblances of that along the way, but no one really like meant it like, go up a weight class and we're gonna get you jacked. But I felt like he meant it, and I knew he did, and here I am like a weight class up and so much happier. But I think part of the role as a coach is not being afraid to tell your athletes those things too.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm, my coach is great. He's like, wherever you're at, I'm like, but I might end up a weight class. And he goes, so like, so like, who cares really? Right. But we tend to get hung up on these things sometimes.
Definitely. I think there's still pressure, particularly if we're talking about like female sports. I see that there's more pressure in females to go down than there is for males. Like, you know, for even my wrestling teammates, for example, yeah, they could easily go up a weight class. For me, I was just like, no, I have to stay small. I have to be a small female. And like, I say like a lot of females still feel this. Yes, we want to be muscle mommies, but we want to be like small muscle mommies. So I commend actually the bigger weight classes in the sport. I think they make some of the just best influences for females out there. And I've actually seen, so USA Powerlifting, my federation, just broke away from the International Powerlifting Federation. And one of the small benefits that we have is we actually have a few weight classes in the higher weight ranges. And it's made for so many more females to have successful careers because they're actually competing against people their own size mm-hmm. instead of super heavyweight. So pretty much put in perspective for you, super heavyweight used to start at like 185. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you. I know some girls at like 200 that are jacked and shredded. Mm-hmm. Like they're not, mm-hmm. but they would still get stuck competing against 275 pound females because yes. it was like unlimited. So now it's nicer to see a few bigger weight classes, which mm-hmm. I think encourages some people to be like, hey, it's okay to go up. Hey, I can still be shredded. And then they see these girls and they're like, wow. You know, like, I don't know about you. I was looking at CrossFit and I was like, damn, these girls are jacked. Like, and like, massive, but in a good way. Like they're mm-hmm. schlubbing around all this weight. And it's awesome to see this movement that, hey, it's okay to be bigger, like go up the weight class, feel better in your body. And yes, your hormones are going to adapt better because you're going to feel better and you're not starving yourself to get to these weight classes too. But yeah, I think it's multifactorial here.
I love that you said this because it was literally going to come out of my mouth next. And so this is a perfect segue into this because I was going to be like, okay, so being at the level that you're at and being in powerlifting in particular, like, I mean, I don't know about you, but I see this stuff. I check all the people out I'm competing with. Of course I do. This is what I do for a living, right? But I look at these women that are big women and they are solid muscle. It's attractive to me. I'm like, holy cow. Like I don't even know how many pounds you are. You're over 200 and your back is like the Incredible Hulk. Like you look amazing. It brings a whole new light to body composition. And I feel like, I mean, now there are people that do take it a little bit too far and they're unhealthy still, right? There's going to be that in any realm that you're in, but for the most part, you're looking at some people that it is straight up lean mass and they are just big. And it has shed a whole new light on, we've been trained so long in our life to try to be small and get tinier. And like, I know I hated my big legs when I was in high school and I just wanted to be skinny. I didn't like my big butt, you know? But now being in strength sports, I look at myself and I'm like, damn girl, you got it going on. You know, like it makes me so happy for where I'm at on so many levels. Like I'm not trying to be something I'm not, number one. Number two, I'm strong and I feel confident and I feel good. And I see all these other women doing the same dang thing. And I'm like, and they're able, then the body composition does actually end up changing and becoming looking better because no longer are you focused on being small. You're focused on feeding yourself and doing things that help you perform at a peak level. And when you do that, your whole body composition completely changes into something that you love anyway.
Definitely. This is almost like the biggest irony of strength training that women are finding. I feel like we grew up, we're same age, like similar ages. So grew up in similar times for females. And I remember, so when I was cutting weight for wrestling, I would go to the gym and, you know, stay on the elliptical for an hour and read the magazines that they had at the gym. And they were like fitness magazine, shape magazine. And all of these women were stick thin and airbrushed, to be honest. And I remember I was so self-conscious as a child. You know, I'm Latina. I've had these thick thighs, honestly, since I was born. And they're great for lifting. But like as a teenager, I was so self-conscious. I wanted to be small. I wanted to be like these muscular women on the magazines. Heck, I even did Jillian Michael workout tapes, like in addition to all the sports I was doing. And the irony is that I love my body more. With 40 more pounds on it, I am more muscular, more lean. I've got abs now where I didn't before. And it's just wild that I used to think whittling my way down would get me this like shredded body. But I do think that the body dysmorphia can go both ways too, where, for example, like, you know, just being fit thick, it's awesome. Like I love my shape and it works for me. But I think, you know, we're not all going to look like the CrossFit females, right? Like they do a ton of cardio. They're working out 6 hours a day. Like, yeah, some of us still have a little cellulite on our legs, but they're okay. They're strong. All the muscles there. If you do the body fat, but it's like, don't forget to love your body for what it does in this mm-hmm. process too. Like I definitely love all the physical changes I've seen my body accomplish in my years of training and playing sports. But what I appreciate most is all the things it can do for me. Like I just went road tripping in Utah through, you know, the national parks and hadn't trained cardio in a little while, but hey, because I was strong enough, I could hulk my way in and out of these mountains and mm-hmm. I could hulk my luggage in and out of the overhead bins where poor women were asking the men to do it for them. And I'm like, damn, girl, be able to pick up your own luggage. But I think that's probably what I love most from lifting, is that it taught me to appreciate my body as it is and for all they can do for me too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny how the perspective on things change. I feel the best I've ever felt. I feel like I look probably the best I've ever looked at almost 160 pounds now. That's the crazy part, right? I started off in fitness and bodybuilding, and when I would step on stage, I was 111 pounds. And I look at that and I'm like, I look back at the pictures and I used to think I was jacked and I looked great and all this stuff in these pictures. I look back at the pictures and I'm like, dear God, I needed to eat something.
Oh yeah, I think that's almost the wilder thing though, seeing your body go through this transformation. I'll tell you, the lowest weight class I wrestled at was 112 pounds and I'm now a very happy 148 pounds, and mm-hmm. it's very nice. But I've been in like five different weight classes between mm-hmm. two different sports, and it's just been a little bit more each year. But I looked sick, like mm-hmm. at those lightweight classes. I looked hungry mm-hmm. and like sucked out. And now I look happy, like I'm enjoying what I do, and I'm able to deliver the performance that I want to as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the most important. Once you start fueling yourself, you're going to start feeling better and you're going to start performing better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome. So if there was anything that you want some females to learn from this podcast, what would be your thing that you want to get out there?
I would say don't be afraid to get started and just be in the gym. I think that's still a point of contention for women getting involved, is that the gym is still this very masculine environment, but it isn't if you get yourself in there and you're the girl that shows up and does the stuff. So don't be afraid to be the only girl in the weight room still, if that's you. You know, bring another friend with you too and teach them and be the only girls in there together. And then with that, I would also say don't feel like if you want to compete, you have to be at a certain level. Like, just do it. Sign up for the meet. You know, it doesn't take more than, I would say, a 6-week training cycle and you can do it. That's honestly what I did. So just don't be afraid to show up. Don't be afraid to sign up and just do the thing.
Mm-hmm. I actually had, we were talking about this also a couple of weeks ago when we were all having lunch, but I had a client sign up with me as a powerlifting client. I was like, I'm not a powerlifting coach. And she's like, I don't care. I want you to coach me. So, you know, she ended up doing her first meet, but she's like, am I where I should be? And I said, you're where you should be because you're where you should be, right? You're not worried about everybody else's numbers. That's the best part about the sport. Yeah. Can you get real crazy and get competitive? Absolutely. You can. But maybe start by getting your numbers on the board, right? Doing a meet. I mean, there's a big difference, and I'm sure you get these comments on your social media too. People are, these guys especially, this is the part that cracks me up. It's like some dude with no profile picture posts something saying, oh, I do that all the time. That's nothing, you know? And it's like, oh, I'm okay. I'm 148 pound chick, but sure. You know, you get this kind of stuff, but there's a huge difference between gym PRs and meet PRs too. You got three referees sitting there. People are always like, what's your biggest PR? And I always tell them my meet PRs, because I'm like, that's legit to me. Don't worry about what everybody else is doing. Do you get in there and see if you even like it too. You know, maybe competing pressure can be hard for people too. But get in there, get some numbers on the board and just do the thing. And then you'll know that's your answer to your question, right?
Definitely. And, you know, I still go in with the attitude that it's you versus you, like it's me versus me. You know, it's the only person I'm competing against is the person I was yesterday and the person I've been in my past few meets. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I'll say that I used to be, and I'm still very competitive, but my mentality has shifted in competitions. Whereas I think as a younger, more immature lifter, I'd focus more on what the others were doing. And mm-hmm. I didn't do as well. Funny mm-hmm. enough, now I don't focus at all on what other people are doing. I just focus on myself. And that's how I'm able to have the performances I want. It's literally just focusing on me. And I know if I hit the numbers that I set out to hit for myself, the rest like will come together. And if it doesn't, well, then the other girl had it, you know, and that's fine too.
Right.
But when you focus on your own gratification from this, like that's where you're going to get the most gratification for doing this, but also get the goals that you want for it too.
Yeah, totally. I actually can say every meet I've ever done, I did not look at what anybody else was even calling, I don't think, for numbers. Some people get real crazy about that. They're looking at the screen and they're like, that person went before me, or they went after me, or, you know, I can't say that I ever paid attention. I paid attention to that at Worlds. That was the only time, but I mean, I say you go in there and you have your numbers ahead of time. You know what you're going to try to probably attempt and stick with that. Don't worry about what everybody else is influencing you with.
Definitely. Just got to tune it out.
So, I mean, we can't do a podcast without talking about Equip powerlifting for just a second.
Love it. Okay.
Because Equip powerlifting is rad and people don't realize that. And it's kind of becoming a little bit of a lost art. So I'm an Equip powerlifter and you are too, which is the coolest dang thing. Why equipment? What got you going with that? Because you don't see that a lot now.
Definitely. So funny enough, when I first started in this sport, it was only equipped, or at least like collegiates was equipped. And so pretty much if we wanted to be competitive, we had to be in the equipment. Because we were like these nerds from the Northeast, and we'd be going against these like Southern Texas schools that they have high school powerlifting. So they were good. And like, they would destroy us if we wouldn't get in the gear. So we just had to get the equipment on. You're totally about to see my cat come through right here too.
Yeah.
but yeah, so we just had to get it on. So we were an equipped powerlifting team and I loved it. You know, it was this huge camaraderie that comes with it. Imagine just 50 kids all like wrapping each other in suits. These were our training practices. And then you have 50 kids cheering for you to get a lift while you're on the platform. So it was awesome. And then I just stuck with it. And it's interesting because I was actually at the very first collegiates where they did both a raw and an equipped division. And I was the idiot who did both at the same time. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily recommend doing that. So I do flip-flop back and forth. But I find now that it's kept me in this longer. So I would say the amount of people I've seen enter this sport and leave just as fast for many reasons. But I found that as an equipped lifter, I've stayed in this longer. I've been maybe more mentally prepared for a lot of situations that people will freak out in. Like as an equipped lifter, you have to be prepared for all the stuff. Oh, your wrap doesn't feel good. This doesn't feel good. Your time's like 30 seconds because you were getting wrapped. Like suck it up, buttercup, and get out there and do what you can. Mm-hmm. So I think it makes you a more resilient raw lifter even coming back over. But I would say my favorite part is definitely the camaraderie that comes with it and getting a knee wrap from someone. Someone's jacking your shirt. You're all in this together. I would say my other favorite part is the unpredictability of it, in that for raw, like for the most part, you kind of know who's going to win, or maybe there's a few people in contesting for it. But with equipment, like it could be anyone's day. The best person could bomb. Maybe they're in depth. Maybe the bencher didn't work, whatever. They could bomb and that could be anybody's day. Or the other component is that the weight jumps you can take are so much bigger. And even just a little manipulation, get a tighter wrap, get extra 10 kilos, or you lose an extra 10 kilos. And that can narrow the game to make it funner. So I enjoy playing the game with that too. And think there's that unpredictability that comes with equipped lifting, but I love
it. I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, people are always like, oh, gear lifting, that's cheating. And it's like, oh yeah, well, it's like rolling the dice every time you do it. It might be considered cheating. Can you, if done right, put on some big numbers bigger than raw? Yes, you absolutely can, but you are still rolling the dice every time you do it because there's a lot more technique involved. There's a lot more variables. Like you said, you could lose 3 pounds before your meet and that's going to completely change how your equipment fits and where your groove is and what you're doing. I mean, and so it's definitely a roll of the dice every time you put equipment back on. And I mean, like for me, if I cut weight for a meet, same thing. I'm like, now I'm trying to fill out the next 24 hours because I don't want my equipment to be loose. You know, there's so many factors and that's what makes it fun to me is I'm like, oh, this is like a super strategic, but also it's definitely like shotgunning things. You know what I mean?
Yep. Definitely.
I was back in equipment for the first time in 9 months, a couple days ago. And holy smokes, I forgot how hard it actually was.
Yes.
I've been raw for quite a while. And I, with that bench shirt on, I went multiply and it was like, which multiply, if you don't know, it's thick. I mean, I know, you know, but the listeners, it's a thicker extra layer essentially. And boy, getting that barbell to even touch at 243 pounds was like, is it there yet? Is it there yet? Oh my gosh. I think my collarbones are going to fold up. Like, come on. And when it touched, it was amazing, but holy smokes. I forgot how much you have to bear with that when you're doing it.
Definitely. I will say it does become a little more like riding a bike in time. Where it's like, now I've been doing it for 10 years and I can flip flop back and forth pretty easily. There's still an artistry to it, but like, even if I hadn't put on my suit in like a year and put it back on, I'm like, all right, horsepower, let's go. But it took a while to get there. Like, I would say it's the experience, I think, that has helped more than anything. It's like, all right. And I have all the same stuff. So I would say, like, until you have your own stuff, you feel good in it. And like, it fits you the same every time. You stay in the weight class for a few years too, and things like that. But yes, there's definitely a lot of things that can influence this situation.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Well, if people want to find you, where do they do that?
Yeah, they can find me on Instagram, sof.squats. You can find me through Connie's page too. So hopefully link this up on here and we can share for you guys there.
I love this. Well, it's been so awesome chatting with you today. I think we got every subject under the sun covered and hopefully everyone loves it. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me here. I appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in. To learn more about me, my online programs, or to inquire about coaching, please visit www.connienightingale.com. And remember, nothing in the contents of this show is intended to diagnose, treat, or cure any illness, and it is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult with your primary care physician before implementing any new health protocols.